This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com, and yes, as I'm checking my watch, looking at the calendar, we are still in the middle of the slowest, dullest, most boring point in time of the calendar as relates to both college baseball, professional baseball, and really any baseball for that matter. So it's going to be a little bit of everything, to be honest. I'm not flying blind, but you know it's a struggle when, for me, I could bullshit about anything baseball related for hours on end if I'm scouring the internet for things to talk about as it relates to anything baseball related. So we'll get to some Texas baseball discussion. We'll get to a little bit of pro baseball discussion, maybe a little just college baseball discussion in general here on episode 18 of the Extra Bases podcast. But the good news is we are, I believe if my math is correct, we are 42 days from the opening of the college baseball season, the opening of when Texas gets back on the field following its trip to Omaha last season. So we're not that far away. And we're only 3 weeks away from Texas's first practice. So those guys will be back on the diamond soon. I would imagine that many of those guys are already back or will be back soon doing some voluntary workouts and things of that nature. Pitchers getting ramped up. So we're not that far away. It's there is definitely light at the end of the tunnel right now. And I was just, earlier today, I was just looking back at some of the statistics from last year's baseball season. Obviously, we've talked many times about Cody Clemens and what he did last season. And it's going to be a total team effort to replace Cody Clemens when you look at what he did statistically. 351 batting average, 444 on base percentage, 726 slugging, 24 homers. Yeah, that's you're not going to replace that with one guy on the roster. I do think it's interesting if you look at the list. It's fair to expect a lot of positive improvement for many of the guys that were regulars last season. These guys are going to get more mature both mentally and physically. You usually see pretty steady increases for talented players over the course of their career. Always the freshman season is usually a rough one. Unless you've just got an elite talent like a Casey Martin at Arkansas last season, you know, David Hamilton struggled statistically, was much better as a sophomore. Duke Ellis was a great example of just a season by individual season developmental piece. He was overmatched earlier in the season, ended up having a fine offensive season. So we're going to see a lot of, I think, positive progression with a lot of these guys offensively. Sean Allen does a really good job working with those guys in terms of swings and approaches and things like that. So if you go down the list, if you start projecting even just a modest gain for just some of these guys, not even all these guys. So the one guy I think is going to take the biggest jump will be DJ Petrinski. He had a terrific fall, really swinging the bat well. And with a lot of those JUCO guys that are just getting their first full stint at that level, seeing that type of pitching consistently, Duke Ellis, Mason Hibler, DJ Petrinski, it's fair to expect those guys to have a jump next season statistically in their ability offensively. So Petrinski was arguably Texas' best hitter in the fall. I know that David Pierce at one point, I don't remember the exact quote, but he told the media that he wouldn't be surprised if Petrinski was their best offensive player next season. That would be a welcome thing for Texas because he profiles as a guy that's going to be somewhere in that middle of the lineup. He hit 9 homers last year and 10 doubles. I could see him being a double-digit home run guy, although he doesn't always lift the ball a ton. I think he's starting to do that more. He's more of a line drive out of the yard kind of guy. Zach Zuby is a lot like that as well. But I think he's going to be a double-digit home run guy. The 257 batting average is probably going to be better. 340 on base is probably going to be better. Pretty aggressive guy in the box. Didn't strike out a ton, but he's my number one guy in terms of projecting a positive increase in offensive statistics next season. David Hamilton will probably take another jump. It won't be as big as the one he took from his freshman to sophomore season in terms of statistics. You know, he went from around 200 to 291, 404 on base percentage, 445 slugging. I think the slugging will tick up a little bit. I think the on base will tick up a little bit. He had more walks than strikeouts last season, which was really impressive. Duke Ellis, to me, is probably going to be around the same type of guy. He was hovered around 300 most of the season. I think that's fair for him next season. But where we'll probably see an increase with Duke is the strikeout number will probably be a little bit lower, at least a percentage. He does work deep into counts a lot. But 55 strikeouts last season, for a guy with his contact skills and his speed, I would think that that number will dip a little bit. Zach Zubi, another guy that gets deep into counts a lot. There's still going to be some swing and miss there with him. I know Texas opened up his stance during the fall to help him maybe see the baseball more, maybe get to those pitches away more, maybe get his hands extended in a way that could drive the baseball. He's got a lot of power to right center in straight away. Maybe get him to showcase that power a little bit more. I think we're going to see more power from him. Again, like I said with Petrinski, Zubi is more of a line drive guy than a lift fly ball guy. If they could get his swing to a point where he's got a little bit more lift in it as opposed to line drives or getting on top with topspin, he's a candidate to hit 15 or more home runs. I mean, the power is big time. He hit 275 last year. I'm not expecting a gigantic increase in terms of batting average. But I think the slugging at 495, he's a guy that should be slugging over 500. And he got on base at a little over, he was at 407 last year. I think that that's fair type of thing. Mason Hibler is an interesting one because he was banged up much of the year. The swing is interesting. I've watched him for a year and I still don't know totally what I think of it. At times I'm like, that could work. And other times it's like, it looks overmatched. But at 261, I think if a fully healthy season or close to it, I just can't see him striking out as much as he did last season and not getting on base better than 357. And you go down the list, you know, Jake McKenzie was a glove-first guy on the lineup. You know, Ryan Reynolds had his issues. They spoke very highly about him in the fall in terms of the way he attacked his rehab and just his maturity and his mental approach to what he was doing was improved. He's got some juice in the bat. I think he's always going to be a bit of a strikeout guy. His confidence is going to come and go, but he should be a little bit better than what he did last season. So you start to look at some of these guys in the lineup, and many of them you can project at least a little bit of an increased offensively. And Texas is going to need it when you're subtracting a Cody Clemens from the lineup. You know, there's not going to be anybody that matches that sort of ridiculously good slugging, especially in clutch moments. That's not going to happen. I just don't see an All-American candidate on this roster unless Hamilton is a 310, 320 guy with a ton of steals and has the elite defense and some on-base to go with it as well. So just don't see one of those guys on the roster. But if you do look at the roster and you look at the lineup, a lot of those people that will be in the lineup next season, talking about a junior, a redshirt sophomore, a senior, potentially a senior, a junior. You go down the list, I mean, Austin Todd would be a junior after his season, banged up season if they get him back healthy. Michael McCann would be a senior. A lot of maturity in that lineup, and you're not forced to count on a lot of young guys to have a lot of at-bats, although I do think that they're going to be players like Lance Ford that are potentially going to crack the lineup. Eric Kennedy. I keep wanting to call him Nick for some reason because I like Nick so much as a pitcher. You know, one of my favorite guys I've ever covered. Really smart guy when it comes to talking pitching. Eric Kennedy, who had a good fall. Lance Ford. You know, Bryce Reagan's a really toolsy guy. Peter Gabe had a good fall. But Texas isn't going to be forced to count on those guys offensively. And like I said, with the freshmen, it's asking a lot to make that jump in competition, especially in the Big 12, where you're seeing so much velocity and oftentimes seeing some pretty good stuff, too, to make that adjustment and hold your own. And, oh, by the way, you're playing sometimes five games a week instead of two or maybe three max if you're in a tournament as a high school player. So you start to go up and down the lineup and you just look at a lot of experience, a lot of maturity, a lot of physical presence as well. And you can start to project some positive increase for a number of those players. And collectively, that's what they're going to have to do to make up for the loss of Cody Clemens. It's just everybody's going to have to be a little bit better. And there's going to have to be fewer outs in the lineup. Like, there were times last year when the bottom of the lineup was just, oftentimes it was just three outs. They just weren't really going to get much from that lineup. So this lineup potentially has a chance to be a little bit deeper. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com, kind of just spitballing here, looking at some Texas baseball statistics as we near the beginning of official practice for Texas ahead of its 2019 season. They are 3 weeks away from today, Friday, before they begin their official practice, and they're 42 days away from the start of the 2019 season on the diamond. So it'll be here soon. Yeah, those guys actually get going in the middle of February and play baseball, which makes for some funky results sometimes because the weather can just be totally unpredictable. And speaking of the weather, I keep hearing everybody, these weather experts still expect Austin in this area to get hit with a brutally cold winter. So I'm just imagining now. The one thing about Dishfog Field, and if you've ever sat in Dishfog Field, you know this to be true. If it's hot in Austin, Dishfog Field is the hottest place in the city of Austin. I remember going down on field level when Texas was about to clinch the Super Regional, because I wanted to get down there for photos and interviews and that sort of thing. And I'm down in the camera well level near the clubhouse, on the field level, about 20 feet from the Texas dugout. It was so hot on the turf that my phone wouldn't work. Like, it wouldn't work. It overheated in my pocket. That's how hot it was down there. So Dishfog Field, when it is hot, it is the hottest place in the city of Austin. On the flip side, when it's cold, it is also the coldest place in the city of Austin. Nowhere in the city gets extreme temperatures quite like Dishfog Field. So I'm imagining myself now just jamming hand warmers in my pants while I'm down the scout section with a radar gun. There might be some times where the radar gun readings are just going to have to be only a couple innings and not an entire outing because of how cold it gets down there. So hopefully the weather is not too bad when the Longhorns begin their season in February. As for the pitching, I would go through those guys, but frankly, there are going to be so many young players that they need to throw innings that it's almost not even worth it because there's going to be a lot of freshmen throwing innings. With some of those guys that are going to be sophomores, I think you can definitely project some increase for those guys. I don't know about all of them. That's just sometimes just how it works with pitching. But there are a lot of those sophomore guys I think are going to be better pitchers next year. I think Mateo Boeke is going to be a better pitcher next year. Blair Henley, I'm still not completely sold on. Curveball at times was terrific in the fall. Fastball just got pounded over the yard every time I saw him. They got to get that thing right if he's going to be what they hope is a Friday starter. He's just got to get that right, or they've got to be super progressive with him in terms of pitch selection, just throw a lot of breaking balls. So you'll see some improvements, I think, from some of those younger pitchers. But really, they're gonna need so many of those freshmen to throw a lot. And frankly, a lot of them should throw. They're very, very talented. I mean, stuff plays, man. The best way to get outs is miss bats. And those freshman arms have some of the best bat-missing stuff on the staff. So, again, we're 3 weeks away from the start of the Texas baseball season. Right now I was looking over at David Pierce was at the ABCA annual convention for 2019 ahead of the college baseball season. I saw Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com, definite friend of the podcast. Kendall Rogers, great dude, tweeting some of the stuff that's coming out from the meetings. Home runs and runs were in batting average are a little bit down from last season, from 2017 to the 2018 season. But viewership was up. According to Kendall, I'm looking at some of the things he tweeted out. The College World Series averaged a little over 1.1 million viewers, which was the most watched College World Series since 2012, which is pretty cool. Super Regionals averaged a little under 450,000 viewers, up 40% from 2017. And when you've got a Super Regional with teams like LSU was in the Super Regional, Texas, Oregon State, Arkansas, Florida, some of those loaded groups, you're going to get some eyeballs on those Super Regionals. So I know a big topic of discussion has been adding the third paid assistant. Looking at Kendall's tweet, said according to a survey, 93% of the coaches were in favor of adding a third paid full-time assistant coach. Of those same coaches, 76% felt their school ADs would be in favor of it too. I think that last number is way too high. I don't know. There might be some ADs that say they're in favor of it to their staff, but when it comes time to pay those guys, it might be a little bit of a different game. And for those of you saying, wait a minute, they don't have three full-time paid coaches, let me explain. So let's take the Texas coaching staff, for example. Phil Hague is their pitching coach. Phil Hague is not a paid full-time coach. And you're probably thinking, wait a minute, this is Texas. Well, you can only have two full-time paid assistant coaches on your staff. So a lot of these programs have a full-time coach, Phil Hague, but he's not a full-time coach from a salary standpoint, if that makes sense. So a lot of these programs, what they do is they have so many camps in the off-season, they're able to generate a lot of money from those camps. That's basically how you can afford to have another, what is basically a full-time coach, but not in name. They're called volunteer coaches because they're not full-time paid salary employees as it relates to the university and the athletic department. So it's been a topic of discussion for a few years in terms of college baseball approving a rule that would allow programs to have three full-time paid assistant coaches. Obviously, there are a lot of people in favor of it in the college baseball community. I'm working off of more of a Texas-centric kind of vibe as it relates to that thing, but I've talked to people that think it's going to pass nationally, but I've talked to people, other people are just like, I don't think it's going to pass because college baseball, it's not the big moneymaker that football is. And there are a lot of programs nationally that don't make money off college baseball. So if you're adding a full-time paid third assistant coach, some of these programs aren't going to be able to do that, which I think gets to a different point of, hey, there's just going to have to be a point where you have the haves and the have-nots in college baseball. That's just going to have to be the way it is. I know another hot topic has always been the scholarship discussion. It doesn't sound like baseball is going to get any more scholarships anytime soon. That also kind of gets back to the discussion of you give baseball more scholarships, you got to get some other things more scholarships, and then you got to fund all those things. While I think it's ridiculous that baseball only has 11.7 scholarships, I do understand that from an athletic department standpoint, it's not easy to just, okay, all of a sudden baseball is going to have 25 paid full scholarships as it relates to Title IX and all of those things. I don't really think that was much of a discussion at this convention. I think more so it was the paid assistant coach and some recruiting things that really I don't think have been finalized yet, and I'm not going to get too nerdy on you with that. Kendall also tweeted out, the NCAA Oversight Committee will vote on instant replay at every level of the postseason in January. The NCAA basically says, hey, it's your responsibility as a host to pay for that and provide that. And according to Kendall, 15 to 16 regional sites last year were ready for it then. So I think that that's going to happen and probably soon. That's just something that they need. They really do. In this hosting site process, you've got to apply to be a host. So if you're getting a host, you've got the facilities to pull this off. It's just a matter of having the funds and to pay for it and get it done. So other than that, not a whole lot came out, at least so far, from the convention. I know David Pierce was there and spoke about a couple of things. And, you know, reigning National Coach of the Year, David Pierce, according to Baseball America. That's a nice little feather to have in his cap after his second season of Texas, an Omaha trip, and one publication names you the College Baseball Coach of the Year. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. We'll wrap up here with some Major League Baseball discussion. As we've talked about many times now, as it relates to the free agent, this offseason and free agency and things like that, there hasn't been much movement. That's, you know, I alluded to that, it feels like months ago when the season ended, we first started getting into the off-season discussion as it relates to free agency and trades and all those things. Baseball's changing, man. It's really changing in terms of the way that teams spend free agent dollars, the way they commit those dollars to players with lengths of deals, the way internally they view how they define value, how they measure value, and how they can find that replacement value to fill in as opposed to spending free agent dollars on players. So it does really feel like, and I know Jeff Passan, who just made the move from Yahoo Sports over to ESPN to basically be the baseball Woj, and one thing he wrote recently, and I agree 100% with this, is I feel like the free agent market is really just waiting for to see what happens with Manny Machado and Bryce Harper and then go from there. Well, it might be another month before those guys sign, because there hasn't been much movement in that market, because there's not many teams seemingly competing for those guys. There's just a handful of teams, and really there's not many contenders in on those guys. There's only a couple, and you know, you've got teams like the White Sox in there, and I'm even classifying the Phillies as basically a borderline contender, because I feel like they have the pieces that they showed last year, the nucleus. They just went outside and a David Robertson, one of the better relievers on the free agent market. They have the pieces to potentially be in the mix as a contender, especially if they sign either Machado, Harper, or definitely if they sign both. But there's not that many contenders. And on these guys, there's not a lot of lower tier teams trying to become contenders that are willing to throw massive dollars at these guys. And the market is just waiting on these guys. Well, the market's also saying, hey, teams are figuring out ways, better ways to acquire talent, to develop talent, to define value than going out and paying, you know, some 31 or 32-year-old player millions of dollars over a 5 or 6 year deal. Because all these free agents want long contracts. Most of them do. You have seen a couple settle for shorter term deals, which that's the exact thing that teams want. They don't want to have to pay these guys unless they're, you know, unless Mike Trout hits a free agent market. They don't want to pay these guys for 7 and 8 years. They love the small term types of contracts. So we have seen a couple of those, but these guys, you know, Craig Kimbrell reportedly wanting 6 years as a reliever. I'd be stunned if any team gives him a 6 year contract. Stunned. It's just that's just not how teams are operating now, and we're seeing this dramatic shift across the board. Not every organization does it the same way, but they're all trying to do the same thing, more or less, give or take a few organizations, which is figure out the best way to spend their money, allocate their resources, and basically estimate value. You know, come up with how much this player is worth in dollars. Okay, and how much is he worth in value on the field? And can we find a different way to come up with that value that doesn't include going out and spending a bunch of free agent dollars? And I can't remember who wrote it today, but I saw a story that it might have been Evan Drellick that covers the Red Sox up in Boston. There's not that much support internally now from organizations to go spend on free agents. You know, baseball people love to think that they're smart, and a lot of them are. But it seems like baseball's way of being smart, or proving that it's smart, is spending as few free agent dollars as possible and either making trades or developing their own guys or devising different plans with their on-field product to just maximize their value. There's not as much support, whether it's ownership, whether it's GM, whether it's scouts, whether it's scouting directors, whatever. It doesn't seem like there's as much support for an organization to go out and spend big money on a free agent. It's just not like that. Whereas I think 10 years ago, it would have been like, all right, let's go get this guy. Let's go get several guys. Let's just go spend all this free agent money and fill our holes and make our roster better. Now teams want to fill their holes and make their roster better internally, or they want to make trades from positions of strength and acquire players that are cheaper or more controllable, or just, you know, they deem that as a good value relative to the free agent market. And we're seeing it play out right now. The free agency is basically it's a snore right now. I mean, it's boring. I mean, if you're into that sort of thing, I mean, yeah, we're going to see more trades and things like that, especially, you know, teams like the Astros haven't made a big move, and some of these other contenders are going to make moves, but they're not going to go out and spend hundreds of millions of dollars on 6 and 7 year deals on guys, or even 4 year deals or 5 year deals. And I know Patrick Corbin got one, and there's going to, you know, Harper is going to get one, Machado is going to get one. Okay, Harper and Machado are big time talents that have proven that they're worth a lot of money. But many of these other guys that are hitting free agency now that are in their early 30s, teams are just, they don't view those players the same way that they used to. They view the back end risk of signing that type of player to a long term deal because you're going to have to pay him a lot of money when he's 35, 36, maybe 37 years old. And a lot of the models show, hey, that guy's not going to be worth that money then, or maybe multiple seasons in the back end of that deal. So we're seeing that play out over the MLB offseason right now. It's something that I've talked a lot about on a previous Extra Bases podcast that I feel like we were going to see, because the teams internally view the way to intelligently roster build by building a roster through things that don't include free agency, besides the occasional small deal here or there where there's not that much of a financial commitment and there's not that much of a long-term year commitment, unless they're able to go sign a no-doubt stud that's in the prime of his career or close to it and sign that player for years that's not going to include a big drop-off at the end of the contract. That's what we're seeing right now. That's the way teams want to roster build now, is through prospects, is through the international prospects, is through the draft. We're seeing teams trade draft picks now and international signing money and bonus pool money, you know, prospects, all these things. And the teams that are really good at it are able to deal from positions of strength. And these teams that aren't good at it are trying to become good at it, and they're trying to do that, and they're okay with hey, you know what, if that means we're going to have 2 or 3 seasons where we're just not that competitive, okay. But here's our plan. Here's our long-term plan. This is how we're going to build this thing in a financially smart way. It just might take some time. You know, nobody's going for the quick fix free agency thing anymore. You're just not really seeing that as much. Even the White Sox, who are trying to throw around a bunch of money with guys like Harper and Machado, they're throwing around a bunch of money, or trying to, with known commodities to bolster their prospects and this young nucleus of players that they've built through a rebuild, through trading some of those guys like Jose Quintana or players like that, James Shields. That's the sort of thing that they're trying to build. And you're just not seeing many teams now going out and spending the big money just to spend it and just as a quick fix to their roster. So we'll see how it plays out. But I don't think the market's going to move much in terms of free agency until Harper and Machado sign. We'll probably see some trades, I would imagine, over the next month, though. I mean, there's some teams that are in great position to make deals that just haven't made deals yet, and they need to add something to capitalize on that contending window. So with that, we'll wrap up this latest edition of the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas. Thank you for listening. The next time I talk to you, we will be a little bit closer to the start of the college baseball preseason. We're getting closer to having some actual practices and some things to talk about. Hopefully, we'll have some more things to talk about as it relates to Major League Baseball. Maybe it'll be a big trade. Maybe just give us something. Just give us something to hold us over. Spring training feels like it's so far away right now. So in the meantime, get to theyak.com/Austin. Check out all our great content. Jason Sukmel and I do the Something's Brewing podcast from San Antonio. Get you the latest on all Texas football recruiting. I had a Dropping Dimes episode recently about Texas basketball winning by 20 points on the road in Kansas State. What the hell was that? Man, I don't know many people that saw that coming, so I try to explain why it happened and what it means. Jeff Ketchum's got all his podcasts. Amara Richardson's back from New Orleans recapping the Sugar Bowl and covering the team in New Orleans and all of that. So a lot of great content at theyak.com/Austin. Get to there, listen to all our podcasts, take advantage of that subscription. And until next time, enjoy your weekend. I hope you're having a happy new year, and we will be a little bit closer to some actual baseball next week when you tune back in to the Extra Bases podcast. Thanks for listening.